This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 31st of May 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 30th of May 2013, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Lynn Parker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. This week's announcements. A reminder that the Annual General Meeting of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper will be held on Monday, the 10th of June 2013, at 3:30 p.m. in the Chesil Theatre in Chesil Street, Winchester, and will be attended by the Mayor of Winchester. The speaker will be Adam Knott, who was a London 2012 Paralympian. He's Hampshire-based, and he'll be 19 in September. And he was born with a condition called ocular cutaneous albinism, resulting in just 10% vision. Both Adam and his 16-year-old brother, who has the same condition, played in the British goalball team in the London 2012 Paralympics. So that should be very interesting to hear him to relate his experiences, not only with coping with his disability, but also having participated in the Paralympics. The AGM will be followed by a summer garden party at 5 p.m. at Chesil House, 4 Chesil Street. This is where we record the newspaper, and it's just 25 yards along the pavement from the Chesil Theatre. And we thanks to Richard Steele and Partners for the use of their garden for that. In your wallet this week, there should be a little reply slip, and we'd be very grateful if you could indicate on this reply slip whether you will be coming to the garden party. It just helps us to plan for from the catering point of view. So these will put your name on it and then tick either yes or no and return the reply slip with your with your memory stick when you send it back. So if you could do that, we'd be very appreciative of that. Alternatively, if you're coming or not coming, you could phone John Richards, the chairman, on 02380 732 888. So that's John Richards on 02380 732 888. Anyway, we look forward to seeing as many of you as possible at the AGM and the garden party afterwards. Let's just pray for that it's going to be a nice sunny day. Other information, the celebrating the wartime WI. The story of how the Women's Institute ran the countryside during the Second World War is set to be told on Wednesday, July the 4th at the Winchester Discovery Centre. Jambusters is an author talk with Julie Summers. A picture of the unpaid and unsung women will be painted, followed by a book signing with copies of Jambusters available on the night. So if you want to book to go to that on Wednesday the 4th of July, the telephone number to call is 01962 873 603. So that's 01962 873 603. To hear about the Women's Institute and Jambusters during the war. And in Alsford, Gardens in Broad Street, Alsford, will be opening their gates to the public to raise money for charity. The open day will be on Sunday, July the 14th, from 11 till 5, in aid of the Alsford Society and the Neuroblastoma Society, which fights childhood cancer. And it's a rare opportunity to visit many unique gardens, many of which follow the burgage plots laid out by Bishop Deluce's developers in about 1200. Entry is £5 a head. Children are free. And there will be afternoon teas and tombolas. So that's Gardens in Broad Street, Alsford, open from 11 till 5 on Sunday, the 14th of July. That's the end of the announcements for the week. Lighting up times today, Friday the 31st of May. The sun rose just before 5 o'clock in the morning and will be setting at 10 past 9 in the evening. And Wednesday of next week, that's the 5th of June, sunrise will be at 5 to 5 in the morning and sunset will be at 9:15 in the evening. If you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. There is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet, should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. The main headlines in the Hampshire Chronicle this week are: no clampdown on student ghettos, says City Council. Hands off our green spaces, say residents. And sitting on fracking fortune. So we'll have the story behind the first headline.
No clampdown on student ghettos, says City Council. Council chiefs have ruled out a clampdown on the growth of student ghettos in Winchester, despite pleas from residents. The City Council has powers to stop neighbourhoods being overrun by so-called houses of multiple occupation, otherwise referred to as HMOs, and the need for landlords to get planning permission. The council considered the issue after calls to halt the rise of HMOs in Stanmore and tackle problems of parking, noise and littering. Southampton, Portsmouth and Basingstoke have already approved the Article 4 directions, which mean planning consent is required to change a family home into a house shared by 3 to 6 unrelated residents. But Winchester City Council aims to curb problems of antisocial behaviour with beefed-up patrols of neighbourhood wardens. Across the city, there are 1,188 HMOs, including 664 in St Michael's and 252 in St Luke's wards. The proposals, which still have to be approved by Cabinet, come after a working group of councillors and senior officers looked into the issue. A council report said the group did not support the use of Article 4 restrictions at this stage, as it was thought that the proliferation of HMOs had already reached a point where effectiveness would be reduced. In other words, it's too late. There are already an estimated 350 HMOs in Stanmore, equal to nearly a fifth of the estate. Students are the main occupants. Councillor Jamie Scott, who represents Stanmore and chaired the working group, said to introduce Article 4 now would be, quote, like bolting the stable door after the horse is gone, unquote, and it wouldn't deal with antisocial behaviour. The houses are there now, and it is not retrospective, he said. Even if we introduced Article 4 directions now, it would not address the 2 a.m. taxi doors slamming, shouts and screaming, and bins left out in the street. Councillor Scott, who has lived all his life in Stanmore, said he had repeatedly raised the issue with the council since he was a community worker in the late 1990s. He said, in 1990, there were only about 50 HMOs in Stanmore. After that, nearly every family home that went up for sale would go to a private landlord. It is not like that now, although a few still do. Student numbers have levelled, and the university is providing more accommodation for first years, he said. The council is planning a one-year pilot of the neighbourhood patrols in HMO hotspots with a review after 6 months. Wardens will have the power to issue on-the-spot fines for littering, fly posting and cycling on pavements for the first time. It will also consult the public about introducing tighter licensing controls of HMOs in Winchester City in an attempt to ensure that they are properly maintained by landlords. At present, planning permission is needed to turn houses into HMOs occupied by seven or more unrelated people. The previous Labour government introduced a rule that all HMOs needed consent. But the coalition overturned the blanket restriction to allow developers to create smaller HMOs without needing to apply for planning permission.
Hands off our green spaces, say residents. Residents were out in force to protest about plans to build homes on parkland in their neighbourhood. Winchester City Council wants to develop three grassy areas in Abbots Barton, including land in Dyson Drive, Hillier Way, and part of a park off Charles Close, Chandler Road. But around 250 people gathered at the park on Monday after the council moved another step closer to developing the land last week. Lorna Chandler, 46, of community group Save the Parks, set up to fight the plans, said the new housing would wreck the park. She said, "Abbots Barton Estate is already high-density housing. The gardens are all small, but we are compensated because of the large park to play in. Kids need space to run. Winchester is a great city and needs to remain so. They have already built on Francis Gardens and they've got Barton Farm. What more do they want? River Park? Oram's Arbour?" Mrs. Chandler, who brought up her two teenage children in Abbots Barton, added, "I think the sheer numbers of people who came out to this was an overwhelming response to the council. Residents are not unsympathetic to having council housing, but we are concerned this will set a precedent for building on open space in a city which is deprived of open space." A housing committee has started a consultation on appropriating council-owned open spaces to make them open to development. Chandler Road resident Brian Espiner told the committee residents felt they had not been listened to. He said, "I fear that reasonable solutions supplied by the local community have not been investigated thoroughly enough and that we have been ignored." Councillor Dominic Hiscock, ward member, added, "Opinion between Dyson Drive and Hillier Way is divided, but the one thing everybody agrees on is that development at Charles Close would be totally unacceptable." But Andrew Palmer, head of New Homes Delivery, said, "This is land we have discussed with the local community at two public consultations, and we think it is perfectly feasible to continue Charles Close around the other side of the buildings." Housing portfolio holder Councillor Ian Tate added, "This is just the appropriation of the land. We will follow this up with a planning application." Residents have also put in a village green application for land at Dyson Drive, which has yet to be formally advertised. Meanwhile, the council has also started the appropriation process for a playground and garages in Westman Road, Week. Mr. Palmer added, "This is underused open space in Westman Road that has attracted antisocial behaviour in the past, and we consider it appropriate for development." Councillor Alan Weir, Week Ward Councillor, said it was an excellent opportunity to build 1 to 2 bed bungalows for the elderly.
Sitting on fracking fortune, 8 licences awarded to firms for controversial shale gas drilling. Controversial drilling for gas could take place across swathes of Hampshire, including countryside north of Winchester and Eastleigh, it has been revealed. Companies have been handed licences to explore for shale gas in South Wanston, Crawley, Littleton, south of the Upper Itchen Valley, Hedge End and Botley. The move comes as the government is set to announce new tax breaks for shale gas extraction, as well as financial incentives for local communities. Crawley and Matterley Estate have been drilling oil for years with little impact. But hydraulic fracturing, known as fracking, is controversial because it involves drilling thousands of feet underground and then pumping in pressurised water and chemicals to crack the rocks below and release trapped pockets of gas. It is strongly opposed by Green campaigners and Liberal Democrat county councillors. They say it could potentially contaminate groundwater supplies, increase dependence on fossil fuels, and cause small earthquakes. But supporters say it could bring down fuel bills, release natural resources, pump millions of pounds into the local economy, and create jobs. Greenpeace, the environmental group, has mapped areas covered by licences to explore for oil and gas exploration issued by the Department for Energy and Climate Change, DECC. In Hampshire, they include north of Winchester from Kingsworthy stretching west towards Stockbridge, east of Winchester under Hampage Wood, north Southampton stretching east from North Baddersley all the way to the Swanwick, including Eastleigh, Lakeside Country Park, Hedge End and Botley.
That concludes the headline stories, and we now continue with the death announcements. Brannigan, Robert, known as Bob Brannigan, at home on the 21st of May. Cherrett, Doreen Jean Cherrett, in hospital on the 25th of May. May, Peg May, on the 22nd of May at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 95. Godwin, Amelia Francis, known as Millie Godwin, on the 23rd of May, aged 93. Lissenden, Arthur Thomas Lissenden, on the 13th of May. Sillence, Millicent Georgina, known as Millie Sillence, nay Dicker, on the 23rd of May, aged 81. And next we have Christian comment.
This week it is written by Canon John Reynolds from Romsey Abbey, and he entitles it The Perfect Love That Casts Out Fear. One of the realities of my early life was living with fear. I well remember the clouds which seemed to hover over our family, largely because of the Second World War. So many things made their contribution. There were the air raid sirens, the gas masks, the presence of the Anderson shelter in the back garden, and above all, the ever-present fear of receiving the little yellow envelope containing the dreaded telegram with the words, "Missing, presumed, killed." My brother was a fighter pilot who survived the war, but my brother-in-law in Bomber Command did not. Finally, my father, who had served in the First World War, died. All these things shaped my childhood, but I suspect fear is quite a conditioning part of everyone's life, with issues surrounding health, employment, or a lack of it, relationships, and many other facets of everyday living. How we deal with this fear raises big challenges for everybody. But the other life-shaping force has a much more pleasant face. It's called love. This, too, is transformative by its very nature. The love people have for each other in terms of friendship, brotherly love, maternal love, and sexual love make it hard to imagine life without it. It can even be present in the most dire situations of suffering and conflict. Day by day, we all live with examples of the destructive force of fear and the creative force of love. The former brings so much de-energizing negativity into living, whilst the latter always seems to offer the prospect of hope and renewal. There is a little verse in the New Testament which goes, "Perfect love casts out fear." And there's another which proclaims, "God is love, and those who live in love live in God, and God lives in them." Together, they suggest that love is the key to overcoming fear. For it is this that is not only at the heart of God, but that which energizes us, giving fulfillment and confidence to face whatever life throws at us.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Emailing news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. .co.uk or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. The first three letters are linked ones dealing with the problems of parking in Winchester, and then after that there were a couple of letters relating to the story that we heard earlier about fracking for natural gas. And then there are a few other more general letters after that. So we'll start off with the first of the letters.
And this first letter from B. Nielsen says that it's not just cars that cause pollution. "Sir, Mr. Taylor's proposal to substantially restrict shoppers' cars from the city centre is typical of a politician's banning approach to a problem when he's short on good ideas. Car park closure would be the final nail in Winchester's ailing retail coffin. Does he really think it practical for mothers with pushchairs and the elderly alike to struggle with bulky or heavy shopping loads onto a bus or somehow clamber onto a bicycle? They will simply go elsewhere where they can enjoy the convenience of parking their car. Our city traders will lose out again. Face facts, Mr. Taylor. The car is here to stay, and it's the most convenient way to deal with one's shopping. If he is genuinely passionate about air quality issues within Winchester, he should consider the whole picture, not just jump upon his populist hatred of cars. He should consider our diesel buses that pump out fumes into shop doorways as they collect their fares or are standing in traffic queues. The engines of modern diesel cars stop running when they're stationary, so why are not buses similarly equipped? Alternatively, think about propane-powered or electric buses. He should question our traffic engineers, who need to totally rethink traffic circulation and through traffic routes within the city. For starters, consider the North Wall's St George's Street congestion fiasco caused by ticket queues to the Brooks Centre car park, lorry deliveries to the rear rather than the front of high street shops, and the lack of a bus lay-by outside Barclays Bank. On the subject of cycling, Mr. Taylor, as an MEP, should be familiar with the Dutch system, where cycle routes have equal status to the roads. Until we have proper cycle routes, cycling and the aggression of today's traffic do not mix. Lastly, Mr. Taylor, think about the pollution from heating, services provisions, bus services and traffic caused by the mass of new housing and apartment development in Winchester. It's not just cars that pollute." That letter is from B. Nielsen, Head Bournworthy, Winchester.
Here is another letter from Caroline Endicott, Crawley, Winchester, regarding cars. Headed, "Car parks are vital for the life of the city." "Sir, parking in Winchester is essential for the life of the city, both for visitors to historical places and for those wanting to do an hour's shopping. I live 4 miles from the city on a farm where there is no public transport nearby. Much as I like walking, that is a long way to buy a pair of shoes. It is essential to be able to park in the city centre. Park and ride is fine if you work in the city or plan to spend the day there, but there is no way I am going to use park and ride to buy my pair of shoes. Removing car parks is going to make us all do more online shopping, and this will kill off the city even further. This is a letter from Caroline Endicott.
Continuing the theme, try using buses where I live, says Sally Eames. Sir, the Green Party member should try using the buses where I live. Then he would not be so eager to close all the car parks in Winchester. Sally Eames, Charles Close, Abbott Barton.
This next letter from Jessica Lloyd is about the good potential for renewable energy. Sir, energy security is ever more pressing. We have dwindling gas resources in the North Sea, and the horrendous consequences of fracking seen in North America should not be repeated in Hampshire. Peak oil and climate change are real threats, and we cannot rely on fossil fuel imports, whose price will rise and rise, and whose fragile supply chain will only get longer. The Winchester area has good potential for generating renewable energy from waste organic matter and both types of solar. Geothermal sources are not found here. Southampton is a good local example, although individual houses can install heat pumps. Lacking exposed high southwest facing hills and direct access to the coast, there are not many sites where large-scale onshore wind is appropriate, but we must find renewable means. Wind turbines are less harmful to the environment, and we need to meet our local energy demands somehow. Bullington has been chosen due to maximum potential for wind energy generation. Where this is correctly sited, the local community can only benefit. Of course, wind may not blow all the time, but when it does, it is reducing the burden on faraway fossil-fuelled power stations, creating power maintenance and supply jobs in the surrounding area and improving energy security. They do change the appearance of an area of outstanding natural beauty, but they are fully demountable and leave a much smaller trace at the end of life. The Centre for Alternative Technology, in its report Zero Carbon Britain 27, stated that there is always wind blowing somewhere on the British Isles. A mix of renewable technologies will ensure that the lights are kept on without spilling out greenhouse gases, relying on rapidly inflating fossil prices from unstable nations, and also creating jobs. That letter is from Jessica Lloyd, Oliver's Battery Gardens, Winchester.
And now another letter on the subject of shale oil, and this is from Charlie Flint, Hinton Ampner, Alsford. Sir, week by week the good news about shale gas pours in. There are trillions of cubic metres sitting under the United Kingdom. It will secure the country's energy needs for many decades to come, and it will mean that we don't have to rely on idiotic wind farms, which don't work on calm or stormy days, and solar panels, which don't work at night. And now shale gas has been given the ultimate accolade. The Liberal Democrats, who are 100% wrong about everything all the time, want it banned. This is from Charlie Flint, Hinton Ampner, Alsford.
W.A.C. Halliwell says, rustic hoarding crosses the line. Sir, where does sponsorship end and advertising begin? I'm sure the dividing line is a fine one. And while St. Cross Cricket Club must be grateful for the financial assistance, I think that Charters, the estate agents, have crossed that line. By the plethora of notices advertising their sponsorship, they have turned the hedgerow of the cricket ground into a rustic hoarding, disfiguring the roadside. I imagine there is some quirk in planning law which permits this, but in the words of Mr. Grouser of the ancient Children's Hour program Toy Town, hosted by Uncle Mac, which some readers may recall, it ought not to be allowed. W.A.C. Halliwell, St. James's Villas, Winchester.
Mary Gigg says many thanks for this special service. Sir, I attended the service in the cathedral last Saturday week, entitled Saying Goodbye, and what a wonderful service it was. The choir, soloist, readings and organ were superb. A lot of thought must have gone into it, and I was pleased to see so many people attending. The lighting of candles for the children who had died and the ringing of a handbell were a marvellous idea. The canon's address was most fitting, and I am sure all who had lost children were comforted. I lost my son 50 years ago on May the 29th, aged 2.5, but one never forgets the joy brought to us during the short time he was with us. Many thanks to everyone who took part in the organising of this very special service. Mary Gigg, I beg your pardon, May Gigg, Tuscan Walk, Chandler's Ford.
And now a letter from Ruth Harrison, Chairman, Week Tenants and Residents Association, Winchester. Sir, I read with great interest about the building of affordable housing in Westman Road Week, Chronicle May the 23rd. May I ask what does Winchester City Council consider to be affordable? Council houses were for people unable to afford a mortgage. I believe that rent should be in line with pensions. I know that a late great lady gave us the chance to buy our council homes, but unfortunately I was not in a position to do so. However, I feel very strongly that if the rents go above the 2% RPI, this year it went up by 5%, I feel there will be more claiming benefits, putting further strain on an already struggling government. I see that now we are to accept the Afghanistan translators in, as it will become dangerous for them to remain after our troops have left. But where will they stay and who will pay? We already do not have enough homes for our homeless. And this is from Ruth Harrison, the chairman of the Week Tenants and Residents Association.
David Selby writes that the commissioner adds to community costs. Sir, when a government states that it wishes to cut bureaucracy and waste, I imagine few people would disagree. If, however, it increases bureaucracy and waste, contrary to his pronouncements, then I think we should protest. A national newspaper revealed that the Hampshire Police Commissioner is now costing the taxpayer 133% more than the old Hampshire Police Authority. I, for one, would like to know how this can be justified. I hear that he has been visiting parish councils to give him advice on what he might be doing. Our council is good liaison with the police, who visit regularly and have a very good idea what the concerns of our community are. The office of commissioner is an import from America, where policing activity is much different to our own. It appears that it has not only added to the cost of to the community, but also a political dimension which hitherto has not been such a prominent feature of this aspect of life. The baloney about the democratic process in voting for a commissioner was undermined by the worst turnout in any national election. The majority of the nation did express its opposition to this foreign imposition, but was ignored. If government is serious about curbing bureaucracy and waste, start with the Job for the Boys Police Commissioners. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
That concludes the letters. We now have historical items from 50 and 25 years ago, and that will then be followed by first person.
So this first historical item is 50 years ago, June the 1st, 1963, and it's entitled Open Air Pools to Be Out of Date. A certain amount of cold water was poured on voluntary projects for school swimming pools at Hampshire County Council at Winchester on Monday. For after hearing proposals to spend £2,000 of public money on pools in Winchester and Basingstoke, members of the council expressed far greater faith in the usefulness of indoor heated baths. Lord Porchester told the meeting, "I personally am against encouraging too many parent-teacher swimming pools in the open, because they will be out of date in 5 years' time." A speaker in some agreement with this view was Mr. A. H. Quilley, chairman of the Education Committee.
And here is another historical event from 25 years ago, May the 27th, 1988, which states, new M3 link will benefit the city. It is absolutely essential that an inspector responsible for the M3 inquiry does, at the third attempt, give a definitive answer, the president of Winchester Chamber of Commerce, Mr. Andrew Smith, said last Friday. At the lunch in honour of the mayor, Commander Brian Hall, Mr. Smith said that ultimately the new motorway link would be of considerable benefit to the city. We would then be ideally placed and may well become a target, not just for retail out-of-town development, but also warehousing and storage operations, as we will be a good location for the warehouse industries that are receiving goods from the ports to the south and east of Winchester, he said.
First person this week is written by Judith Hennigan. And she entitles it, Parents Need Classes in Constructive Tiptoeing at Exam Time. June may bring the roses, but for me it means exams. This is hardwired from childhood, just as Saturday is Pocket Money Day or After Eights are for grown-ups. I can still remember the salmon pink of my A-level history paper, and the pale Asia of an English literature. The butterflies in my stomach may have faded, but the callus on my index finger is a permanent souvenir. 30 years later, I'm the grown-up, and my children are sitting A-levels and GCSEs. They're in that strange bubble of nerves and delirium, minds chock full of information they will never need again. It's my job to absorb the static, keep oxygen pumping round the house, feed their brains and their writing hands. I make gallons of tea. I clear away the stacks of dirty cups. When it all seems hopeless, I pop toffees in their pockets. I long ago dismissed the notion that exams used to be harder. They were different, certainly. They tested different things. But my friends and I navigated them with wider margins for error. My parents never asked about revision. They said, you've done your best, and left it at that. Back then, stress-related disorders were a rare occurrence. This wasn't because we were tougher. Nowadays, the testing is more prescriptive, and the stakes never higher. So how can I best help my children? My daughter reminds me how I once tried to teach her long division the old-fashioned way. No vertical columns. Her maths teacher was politely appalled. I'm hopeless at physics, and I've never mastered the subjunctive. Some parents are more hands-on. They swat up on case studies, memorise the equations. They're pretty much ready to take the exam themselves. Such dedication may well help the child, but I'm sure it must add to the stress. After all, exams already test parents in so many ways. Take the example of a sleeping teenager. Are they A, unconscious mid-afternoon because they're exhausted from study and should be left alone to recharge? Or B, in denial about an imminent Spanish oral and should be woken up for immediate cramming? Or C, deliberately inert while their brain absorbs knowledge from the textbook tucked under their pillow? This is probably a trick question. I'm bound to get it wrong. The University of Winchester deploys a kindly Labrador called Tess as a stress buster for students. Parents at exam time need similar diversions. A war to talk to, perhaps. Goldfish gazing. Classes in constructive tiptoeing. I wish I could make it easier for my children, but the bottom line is that the experience of exam helps prepare them for the challenges ahead. Change is coming. National insurance numbers, student loans, and polling cards arrive with their results. They'll be fine, I'll tell them. They're doing their best. In the meantime, I'll put the kettle on.
We now move on to items of general news interest.
Champagne corks are popping in Winchester. Sainsbury's makes City Branch a champagne store. With its multi-million pound homes and bespoke shops, it is a city famous for its champagne lifestyle. Now Hampshire's affluent county town has seen its status recognised by supermarket chain Sainsbury's, which has unveiled plans to help well-heeled customers enjoy the finer things in life. Bosses have decided to make the Winchester main branch of Sainsbury's one of the company's new champagne stores. Catering to wealthy customers, the shops will be the only ones in the Sainsbury's empire to stock the more upmarket brands of bubbly, including £130 bottles of Krug and a range of Bollinger Krug vintages. The company is also planning a two-tier system for spirits, with selected stores supplying £70 bottles of 17-year-old malts or a £120 Glenmorangie. Sainsbury's has more than 1,000 outlets, but Winchester, which in December 2012 had average house prices of more than £370,000, is the only Hampshire community deemed posh enough to qualify for the honour. A Sainsbury's spokesman said, "Within our champagne stores, we have significantly extended our champagne offering to include ultra-premium brands such as Krug, Dom Perignon and Bollinger Grand Année, as well as a greater choice of products available in Magnum. The response from our customers to this news has been very positive. It suggests that while some customers have traded down to more affordable but less prestigious options, such as Prosecco, there is a real potential to open up the top end of the market to customers willing to experiment. Retail analysts say Sainsbury's choice of venues shows a clear north-south divide."
Tate loses cabinet seat. A leading Winchester city councillor has lost his seat in a shock cabinet reshuffle only 2 weeks after he was given extra responsibilities. The city council issued a statement saying that Tory Ian Tate has stood down as portfolio holder for housing and new homes. But Councillor Tate told the Hampshire Chronicle that council leader Keith Wood had sacked him. The long-serving city councillor said he was passionate about providing more affordable housing and sad to no longer be at the top table. Councillor Tate, 51, who failed in a bid to also become county councillor earlier this month, said he had found the role stimulating and rewarding. In the statement, Councillor Wood said, "I do not plan to make any comment on this matter, but I intend to review the position with Ian in early autumn to see whether it would be sensible to reinstate him at that time. Ian has achieved a great deal in the difficult area of new council housing and made very much progress, for which I am very grateful." The change comes less than 2 weeks after Councillor Tate was given responsibility for housing and new homes in a shake-up which saw the number of cabinet seats reduced by one. Council Tait had previously been responsible for new homes delivery only and took over housing from Councillor Tony Coates, who lost his seat on the Cabinet, but has been temporarily reappointed portfolio holder for housing, while Councillor Wood will lead on new homes delivery.
And to attend Shipping Festival at Cathedral. It is a special service that will this year be given the Royal Seal of Approval. The Shipping Festival service at Winchester Cathedral on June the 13th will be attended this year by Her Royal Highness the Princess Royal. The festival gives thanks to the continuing prosperity of the shipping industry in Hampshire and for the seafarers who serve and contribute to it. Flags will be flying to mark the occasion, including the white ensign of the Royal Navy, the Merchant Navy's red ensign, Her Majesty's Coast Guard, and Royal Fleet Auxiliary's blue ensign, and the Army ensign of Her Majesty's Army vessels. They will all be carried at the service, which will be given this year by the Right Reverend Jonathan Frost, the Bishop of Southampton. The royal visit will mark the anniversary of when the flags of the Merchant Navy and the missions to seamen were received by the Bishop of Winchester, F.T. Woods, D.D., in 1930, who retained them for safekeeping in the cathedral. Since then, the Southampton Master Mariners Club has organised a service each year, apart from during the Second World War. Not only will the Princess Royal attend this year, but the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, the Mayor of Southampton, and the Mayor of Winchester will also be in attendance at the festival. Proceeds from a collection which will be taken during the service will be divided equally between the Southampton Seafarers Centre and Winchester Cathedral.
Town Hall Rich List Revealed. New figures show that two senior managers at Winchester City Council are paid more than £100,000. The Taxpayers Alliance released its 2013 Town Hall Rich List, featuring the latest figures for how many public servants earned more than £100,000 in 2011 to 2012. At Winchester, there were two, Chief Executive Simon Eden and Stephen Wetnall, Corporate Director, Governance, the same as the previous year. Although Mr. Wetnall is junior to Mr. Eden, he also acts as returning officer at local and general elections, which boosts his income to £109,000. TPA figures report that the amount of money spent on officers in Southampton earning more than £100,000 a year actually increased from 2010-11 to 2011-12. But the climate of widespread austerity is illustrated by the fact that three authorities in the county have cut the number of top-level public servants. Hampshire County Council saved almost £1.5 million by bidding farewell to 10 staff on packages of more than £100,000 and scaling back payments to other staff members. The TPA figures show that Hampshire Chief Executive Andrew Smith was the top-earning civil servant in the county, with a salary of £207,372 in 2011-12. His yearly pay packet was increased to £234,538 by employer pension contributions. 28 of his colleagues, including Children's Services Director and Deputy Chief Executive John Coughlin, on £167,734, were also on salaries of more than £100,000 for 2011-12. But that figure had shrunk by 10 from 2010 to 11. No one from the County Council was available for comment.
Join the big sleep out at Cathedral. More than 500 people are expected to spend the night under the stars in Winchester this September to raise money for the city homeless. The big sleep out is being organised by charities Trinita Winchester and Winchester Church's Night Shelter. The fundraiser was launched at Winchester Cathedral, with Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, on hand to lend his support. He said, "I've always been impressed by the work that these people do. It's not that just keeping people off the streets, it's all the aftercare, and I have met one or two of the recipients of this sort of help and will be supporting it." The sleep out will take place in the cathedral grounds on September the 20th, and Trinity's Director of Strategy and Fundraising, Michelle Gardner, is encouraging people to get involved in return for sponsorship. Organisers hope to top previous year's efforts, which have raised as much as £36,000.
Up for Downs Challenge. To cycle 200 miles in 24 hours, you really have to be fit. But 51-year-old John Ellis is ready for the challenge of the South Downs Double. Next month, he will cycle the hilly South Downs Way to Eastbourne and back to raise money for Parkinson's UK, aiming to complete the non-stop ride in one day. Only a handful of cyclists have done so, and Mr. Ellis is one of the oldest to attempt it, making him feel very nervous. Mr. Ellis, a management consultant of West End Terrace, Winchester, said, It's a huge logistical and fitness challenge. I'm doing it unsupported, so I have to make sure I have enough food and of the right kind, and I have to make sure my equipment is up to the job. Then there's the navigation. You would think the South Downs Way was well marked, but it's easy to get lost, especially as I will be cycling in the dark and almost flying blind. He added, "It's a huge step into the unknown for me, but I will finish it regardless of the time. If I finish in one piece and my bike doesn't break, then I will be delighted." Mr. Ellis's father, Jeff, aged 78, has suffered from Parkinson's for years, and he is aiming to raise £2,000 to help fight the disease.
Science Centre's reputation reaps new record. InTech Science Centre and Planetarium near Winchester attracted a record number of visitors in 2012-13. It welcomed 155,138 people, the highest figure since it opened in 1982. That represents a 33% increase on the previous year's number of 116,740. The centre, based at Morne Hill since 2002, includes the largest digital planetarium in the UK and aims to increase interest among the young in science, technology and engineering. Verena Cornwall, director, said, "The results of our efforts in this period have clearly brought in record visitors. As a self-sustaining charity, much of our attention is placed on providing a high-quality visitor experience. When we polled our visitors in 2012, we found that recommendation was the number one reason that new visitors came. We are delighted with the increase in visitors and the resulting impact of the charity's work." This year, InTech is unveiling a new recycling exhibition and an under-fives learning zone. It has also been trialling extended opening over half-term of 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday, as well as a free shuttle bus service in school half-terms from Winchester City Centre and St Catherine's Park and Ride. From June, family-friendly Fridays will be launched, with late-night opening until 9 p.m. and home-cooked dinners. Also newly commissioned is a series of Saturday night live presenter planetarium shows. They showcase the real-time UniView system, allowing the audience to fly through a digital model of the universe.
Film highlights hate crime. A Winchester theatre company has teamed up with Hampshire Police to crack down on hate crime against disabled people. Officers joined Blue Apple Theatre to create a film which they hope will encourage more people to report incidents to police. The film, Paul's Story, was commissioned by the Home Office and follows a man with Asperger's syndrome, a mild form of autism, who is suffering from abuse and prejudice from his community. It premieres this Saturday, June the 1st, at the Everyman Theatre in Southgate Street, after which it will continue to be used as a training tool for the police. About 100 people from across Hampshire took part in the production, including police officers and actors. Superintendent James Fulton said, "It is not always easy to recognise abuse of this nature when it is happening, or to have the confidence to come forward and report it when you do. If you are able to tell someone, the police, a friend, a carer, then there are many things we in the police can do to resolve the problems, prevent it from happening again, and help you to get the support you need."
Risk pays off as Hillier strikes gold. A world-renowned Hampshire horticulturist received a royal seal of approval after clinching a record-breaking title at the Chelsea Flower Show. Growers at Hillier Nurseries secured their place in the distinguished London show's history books by winning their 68th consecutive gold medal, capping off the feat by showing Her Majesty the Queen around their spectacular floral display. The internationally acclaimed plant producer, based at Ampfield House near Romsey, scooped top prize in the floral marquee category for its breathtaking display of nearly 4,000 flowers and plants, plus garden pools, fountains, and crocodile sculptures. The stunning showcase, themed on risk, included new varieties of French lavenders called Bouquet of Roses, a new form of black elder named Blue Sheen, the new cultivator of Astelia, Silver Shadow, and a French-bred viburnum called Le Bois Marquis. Hillier Managing Director Andy McKindo praised the firm's veteran plant preparer as his secret weapon for nurturing the display to absolute perfection. "We are absolutely delighted to have won Chelsea Gold in its centenary year," said Mr. McKindo. "We have an incredible team at Hillier who have once again risen to the challenge and created a beautiful, seemingly established garden in just 10 days. For a while, during this cold, dark spring, our theme of risk seemed particularly apt. But our secret weapon is our veteran Chelsea plant producer and preparer, Ricky Dorley, who has nurtured nearly 4,000 trees and plants to absolute perfection." Mr. McKindo, John Hillier, and Ricky Dorley chatted to the Queen about their garden and explained to Her Majesty how the display was prepared and the plants chosen. The Risk exhibit is a series of garden scenes featuring eye-catching garden pools and fountains, a modern garden pavilion, and crocodile sculptures emerging from the undergrowth, all set amidst rich, lush, dramatic, inspirational planting.
No regrets over Alpha Park purchase. The woman in charge of Hampshire Police finances, when a controversial £9.6 million was spent buying a new headquarters that has never been used, has defended the decision. Councillor Jackie Raymond, who headed up the county's police authority until it was scrapped last year, said she had no regrets about buying the Alpha Park site, dubbed an £11.5 million white elephant, in 2008, insisting it was the best option at the time. But she added that she could not defend the fact it had sat empty for 5 years, running up a hefty bill for the taxpayer, before a decision was announced last week to finally sell it off. More than £1.8 million has been paid out by the force for round-the-clock security for the premises, which were originally bought as a new police headquarters. Refurbishing it to make it fit for purpose would have cost a further £15 million. The decision to buy the site was reviewed by the Audit Commission, which ruled the authority had acted properly and had not wasted taxpayers' money. But the vast amount of money lost has caused anger among rank-and-file officers, as more than 400 officer posts are lost due to cutbacks and pension contributions are increasing. Details of the sell-off were unveiled by Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes and the Chief Constable Andy Marsh in a joint press conference. Mr. Marsh refused to criticise the purchase, but said it was quite legitimate that questions about whether the right decisions had been made were asked. He told how money saved in the estate's review, estimated at more than £40 million through the sale of buildings, would now be ploughed back into frontline services. Mr. Marsh said, "I believe this will certainly allow us to protect jobs and services in the future." The circumstances and rationale to purchase Alpha Park are a matter of public record. Now the constabulary employs 1,000 fewer people and circumstances have changed. The estate's strategy will save us money and annual running costs and enable us to reinvest in frontline policing. Mr. Hayes added, "The deal was made 5 years ago, and the fact is that we don't need it now, and a decision has been made to sell it as soon as possible." Councillor Raymond said, "I have no regrets over buying Alpha Park, and am not going to defend the fact the site was never used. The police authority was looking for a new site to concentrate a number of services and include a new headquarters function. Alpha Park was one of a number of options. I don't think we paid £3 million over the asking price, but I'm not going to argue that. We were advised it was a good deal and a good site, a safe and secure purchase." She added, "I'm not shying away from my responsibility, but if we all had the power of hindsight, the world would be a different place."
£16 million shortfall in house build scheme. City Council could sell off land to cover costs, by Joseph Curtis. Winchester City Council could sell off land to cover a £16 million shortfall in its council house building programme. The current cost is about £36 million, £16 million more than budgeted for in February, due to a council over-programming strategy of listing more schemes than it can afford. But councillors believe £9 million of that will be covered by capital grants and developers' contributions, leaving £7 million outstanding, which could be covered by selling off individual plots of land. Speaking at a housing committee last Wednesday, Andrew Palmer, head of New Homes Delivery, said, "We always have the ability to sell small sites for one or two properties that are not economical for us to bring forward. It is a way we can provide housing and generate capital. It is not a major part of the programme, but a useful option." Mr. Palmer said no such sites had been identified yet, but there were 10 to 15 potential plots officers were looking at. He added that there were financial controls which would stop schemes going ahead if there was not enough money. The council has also dropped a scheme in Milland Road after residents would not agree to leave their homes. It would have seen four homes demolished and 15 built, and housing portfolio holder Ian Tite said, "Milland Road was a proposal where we looked to negotiate with council tenants and one private owner to see whether we could deliver a scheme to provide housing for 50 people. We will not be pushing people out of their homes to develop these sites, and that is a commitment I'm holding to." But he confirmed the council was still interested in the site and would redevelop it if the opportunity arose. Several other schemes were dropped, including the Park, Droxford, Hobbs Close, Bishop Sutton, and Five Field Roads, Highcliffe, because they were not considered viable. Councillors also called for more shared ownership schemes where the council would team up with another housing association. Councillor Tate said, "I have made it explicitly clear that we are open for business and that they should come to us with ideas. I don't have any hang-ups if the housing is delivered through a registered provider or the council. An affordable home is an affordable home." Speaking after the meeting, Labour leader Chris Pine said, "I don't know why there has not been a comprehensive review of brownfield sites. We have an opportunity to cheaply purchase them and develop them first. We are not looking at quick wins. We are spending hardly any money on attic conversions, side extensions or two-bedroom bungalows for the elderly to free up three-bedroom homes." He added, "Labour do not support evicting current tenants from their homes before we have looked at all the options. The updated programme will now go to Cabinet and full Council for private approval."
Explorer sets off on 14th adventure. Bears, wild dogs and minefields are just some of the dangers Winchester explorer John Pilkington could face on his latest adventure. The 63-year-old globetrotter left last Wednesday for a solo trip across the heart of war-torn Balkans. Travelling by foot, bus and hitchhiking, the former council planner will trek across mountain ranges and meet people living in remote villages. The solo trip will take him 2,500 miles from the seaport of Trieste in northeast Italy to Istanbul, the biggest city in Turkey. He will pass through 12 countries, including Bosnia and Herzegovina, Serbia and Montenegro, Macedonia, Albania and Bulgaria. Highlights include a two-week hike across the mountain peaks of the cross-border Balkans Trail. Mr. Pilkington said, "The Balkans have always fascinated me. I went there briefly in the 1970s. Since then, they've abandoned communism and endured terrible conflicts. Now seems like a good time to see how people who have suffered so much on all sides are recovering and what, if any, reconciliation there has been." He plans to pass through the Balkans Peace Park in the Dinaric Alps to help highlight the project. Since leaving his job at Hampshire County Council, Mr. Pilkington has established a reputation as a travel writer and a photographer.
Call for Junction Safety Review. Winchester MP Steve Brine is calling for a safety review of a busy road near Winchester. Mr. Brine said he will write to the County Council and Police about the London Road junction with the A33 in Kingsworthy after an accident last week. Three cars were involved in a collision on Wednesday at around 3:50 p.m. One of the drivers was trapped, but no one was injured, and police are not investigating the incident further. But Mr. Brine said, "My concern is that with development coming online at Francis Gardens and ultimately at Barton Farm, this junction will come under increasing pressure." He added he was also concerned about the nearby Loveden Lane junction, a short distance along the A33.
Missing girls found safe and well. Two teenage girls who went missing for 48 hours have been found safe and well. Fears were growing for the safety of Tilly Young from Winchester and Caitlin Ross from Eastleigh, who are both aged 14. After an appeal organised by their parents and inquiries by Hampshire Police, the pair were found in Shirley Warren, Southampton.
Pedal, paddle and pace needed for triathlon. Winchester will see the return of a charity triathlon in July as participants pedal, paddle and pace known as PPP, for Macmillan Cancer Support. Winchester PPP has so far raised more than £50,000 over the years, and organisers will be hoping to top previous year's tallies of £10,000. The event will be on Sunday, July the 21st, and entrants will cycle 20 kilometres before running 5 kilometres along the Hockley Viaduct and through the water meadows, and the event finishes with a 2-kilometre kayak along the Itchen Navigation. The event is for all abilities and can be tackled as an individual or as part of a team. Winchester and Chartersford MP Steve Brine was with Katie Blake of Macmillan Cancer Support to launch the event in Easton. He said, "This is such a fun event, but, as importantly, it helps Macmillan to even more people for..." "And as importantly, it helps Macmillan do even more for local people fighting cancer. We really want 2013 to be the most successful year to date." And there is a photograph of the team with T-shirts and sporting the words "We pedal, paddle and pace," and some of them with bicycles. And Steve Brine is there with his two young children, and also Katie Blake and, of the Macmillan organisation.
Police pledge to clamp down on drug takers. Police have pledged to clamp down on drugs problems in North Winchester. Residents and councillors from Week, Full Flood, Littleton and Hairstock gathered at a Police and Communities Together, that's PACTE, PACT, meeting at Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall to discuss crime issues. Officers have been focusing on antisocial behaviour as a priority for those areas, but said they would extend that to drugs. PC Robin Tebb said, "Drugs are always an issue, and Winchester is an affluent place, so it attracts dealers from London. We do various operations to try and combat it, such as surveillance." Residents raised concerns over drug activity in Berwick Avenue, Week, and near shops in Stockbridge Road, Full Flood. Councillor Anne Weir, who represents Week on the City Council, said, "A concern I have is residents reporting needles lying around St Matthew's Field at Acorn Close." PC Tebb added, "If these things come up, call us on 101 or call Crime Stoppers. We will often add these areas to patrol lists to pay special attention to them. We had a problem at St Bartholomew's Church in Hyde with people using drugs, so we went on more patrols there and the problem went away." PCSO Gavin Cooper added, "We do patrol St Matthew's Field, and we have stopped individuals there and will carry on doing so."
Top team praised for stroke care. Staff at Winchester Royal Hampshire County Hospital have been praised for their work tackling strokes. Stroke care at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, which runs the hospital, has been recognised by the South East Stroke Network. They presented the Trust with a certificate for being the most efficient site in the South after three research nurses, Charlotte Eglinton, Deborah Della Fera and Jennifer Wilson, recruited more patients to their portfolio studies than any other organisation in the area. The stroke research team is spread across the HHFT sites at Royal Hampshire County Hospital and Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital. And there is also a photograph of Nurse Charlotte Eglinton holding the certificate with Dr. Nigel Smith, consultant physician, and staff from the Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust.
Park and Stride plan to ease traffic at expanded school. A Park and Stride scheme is planned at an expanding Winchester school in a bid to reduce traffic. From September 2014, St. Peter's Catholic Primary in Oliver's Battery Road North is to accept 15 more pupils in reception, bringing its yearly intake to 60. Hampshire County Council has applied to itself for permission to increase the number of pupils at St. Peter's Catholic Primary from 362 to 420, and inked an extra 58. But there are already concerns about traffic and parking. St. Peter's is in a cul-de-sac, and most parents drive their children to school, though there is a fleet of 4 minibuses. According to County Council traffic surveys, at its peak, there can be 182 vehicle movements between 8 and 9 a.m. and 106 between 3 and 4 p.m. in Oliver's Battery Road North. Local residents complain it can take 20 minutes to drive down their street at the start and the end of the school day. Now it is proposed parents can park at the planned new park and ride site at Pitt Manor and walk their children to school. However, only 10 to 15 spaces will be earmarked for St. Peter's parents under these proposals. A traffic light with pedestrian crossing is planned for the new 200-home Pitt Manor development at the junction with Romsey Road, and it is proposed to install a gate off Romsey Road and a new footpath across the playing field so pupils can walk to school. Other improvements include relocating the pedestrian crossing at the junction of Stanmore Lane and Romsey Road and creating 2 lanes so vehicles can turn right and left. This should help reduce traffic tailbacks in Oliver's Batteries Road North and Stanmore Lane at peak times, according to the council. The council's regulatory committee will vote on the planning application next Thursday, June the 6th. Other proposals include a new classroom block with a music room and a bigger kitchen. County Councillor Martin Todd, who represents the area, said he would have opposed the school expansion if there had not been measures to deal with traffic concerns. Councillor Todd wants the changes to the Romsey Road Stanmore Lane junction, park and stride at Pitt Manor, and new footpath to be completed before the school gets any bigger. Hampshire County Council has had to expand and build new schools across the county to meet its statutory obligation to provide places because of rising birth rates and house building.
This next article also has an educational theme and is entitled Residents Back Option B in Super School Protest. Winchester residents are gearing up for continued battle over controversial plans for a new super school. Residents in Cheriton Road and Lynx Road oppose the expansion of the Westgate Secondary School to include a 420-place primary school, arguing it will increase traffic and pollution problems. The County Council wants to build the school to increase school place provision, and a council committee will decide on the plans next Thursday, June the 6th. Around 50 residents met at the Full Flood Arms pub last Thursday to sign an open letter to the council protesting against the plans, and were joined by new county ward representative Councillor Martin Todd. Residents argue primary school provision should be met citywide rather than confined to the Westgate, and that there is less demand for places in the Full Flood area, meaning spaces will be filled by children coming from other parts of the city, increasing traffic. Cheriton Road resident Paul Cooper said, "We have consistently argued that option B, the expansion of all primaries to cater for local demand, is a better route forward. This provides genuinely safe walk-to-school opportunities for children, whereas centralising the supply of places onto a single site at Westgate is going to lead to an overcrowded, overdeveloped site that will suffer gridlock twice a day." Neighbour Chris Jones added, "That is not to mention the safety impacts that are all too easily ignored on the basis that nothing has happened yet. We continue to urge the council to think again and hope that the committee scheduled to decide the issue on June the 6th fully takes on board the rational objections that the county council seems determined to ignore. The county council plans to place 40 parking spaces in Chilbolton Avenue to try to reduce congestion, but residents argue the spaces are too far away and in too busy a road. Nobody from the county council was available to comment at the time of going to press.
Covenant forges closer links with the military. A covenant pledging more cooperation between Winchester and the armed forces has been signed. It is a voluntary statement of mutual support between the civic and military chiefs, promising to work closer together in civic, ceremonial and community events, activities and campaigns. Meanwhile, the council will seek to provide access to housing and jobs to past and present members of the armed forces. Councillor Ernie Jeffs signed it in his role as the city's mayor. Winchester Garrison Commander Brigadier Alan MacLeod, Colonel Stephen Oxlade of the South East Reserve Forces, and William Bates, County Chairman of the Royal British Legion, also signed it. Leader of Winchester City Council, Councillor Keith Wood, said, "This is a covenant that is meaningful because it underpins a real partnership. For our part, we will ensure we make a real contribution, and I know the military will also do their part." An informal celebration of the new covenant is planned for the Armed Forces Week next month. Brigadier MacLeod said, "We, within the armed forces, very much value our strong links with Winchester City Council. What provides real comfort is the knowledge that our local communities value the contribution made by armed forces personnel and their families, and in this regard, Winchester has been unwavering. It is important that we in the military have close links with society that we are here to defend and from which we draw."
Naomi House Chief to step down. The long-standing chairman of a Winchester charity is stepping down in September. Professor Carly Disease will leave Naomi House Hospice after serving the maximum term possible permitted by the charity's rules. He first joined the Sutton Scotney-based charity in 1992, 5 years before the hospice opened, and became chairman of trustees in 1999. Professor Aziz, a former BBC, ITV and Channel 4 journalist, will now become chairman at disability charity Enham. Naomi House is looking for a new chairman to work alongside Chief Executive Chris Robinson.
Groups want stake in giant wind farm. Green campaigners are trying to buy a stake in a controversial proposed wind farm north of Winchester. Hampshire Energy Group is in negotiations with EDF Energy Renewables for a 10% community ownership of the planned 14-turbine farm at Bullington Cross near Micheldever. The group was formed recently by volunteers from Winchester Action on Climate Change, that's WINAC, and Andover and Basingstoke Transition Networks. Martin Heath, group spokesman, said, "We want to ensure that our community benefits from the operation of the proposed wind farm at the Bullington Cross site. This is a great opportunity for local people to take an ownership stake in what will be one of Hampshire's largest renewable energy developments." He added, "Bullington Cross is one of the most suitable sites in Hampshire for a wind farm. The farm is situated at one of the busiest road junctions in the county, is 3 kilometres away from the nearest village, is not in a national park or in an area of outstanding natural beauty, and the land can still be used for farming as it is now, and it's one of the windiest places in Hampshire. If its plans are successful, Hampshire Energy Group intends to become a cooperative, allowing residents to invest in the group while any excess profits are put back into the community. But local residents are fighting the plans, arguing that development would damage the countryside, particularly due to the size of the turbines, which could be up to 126 metres tall. The Ministry of Defence could also object over fears the turbines might interfere with radar for low-flying planes and helicopters. EDF has submitted planning applications to Winchester, Test Valley and Basingstoke and Dean councils for approval, as the proposed wind farm falls within EASY Authority's area. Public consultation on the plans ended last Friday, and a decision is expected by October the 30th.
"Let's talk," says Chef Hugh's restaurant boss. "River Cottage deal due to be signed soon." Celebrity chef Hugh Fernley Whittingstall's business has been explaining its lack of engagement with local people over controversial plans for a new restaurant in Winchester. River Cottage Canteen and Deli plans to open at Abbey Mill in Colebrook Street later this year. In a statement, Managing Director Robert Greeson said, "River Cottage is very keen to open its next canteen in Abbey Mill and has been working with Winchester City Council, the landlords, to finalise a lease for the property. However, despite our best efforts, the contract is not yet ready for signature, albeit we believe that it will be soon. We would like to engage with the local community and discuss our project, the philosophy behind the canteen business, and explain how we will be working with local suppliers. Regretfully, however, it is difficult for us to do anything until we have a documented agreement with the council." Mr. Greeson added, "We can see that the redevelopment of Abbey Mill is a complex project, and we're sure that the council are doing a valuable job bringing new life to a distinct and historic building. We will do what we can to help them in the process and hope to reach agreement shortly so that we can get on with our part of the job and talking to our neighbours." Last year, the Hampshire Council revealed the council was negotiating a lease with River Cottage for the mill, subject to gaining planning and licensing approvals. But residents living in Colebrook Street said it was the wrong place for a restaurant, claiming it would add to parking problems, pollution, and restrict access for emergency services on the narrow city centre street. A county council spokesman said, "From the City Council's perspective, the project is progressing as expected. As the same statement says, we hope to reach agreement shortly, and that will allow River Cottage to talk to the local community about their plans."
Street Lights Programme rolling out. It is a project aimed at lighting the way for thousands of people across Hampshire. Now Hampshire County Council's multi-million pound plans to improve and replace the county's streetlights reaches its next stage. Over the next 3 months, Bishop's Waltham, Colton Common, Ashurst and Coalbury will all benefit from the council's scheme. Council chiefs hope the programme, which is being carried out by Southern Electric, will increase energy efficiency and reduce carbon emissions from the county's 150,000-plus streetlights and illuminated signs and bollards. Work will start in Bishop's Waltham next month. The new lighting will see the replacement of approximately 283 lanterns and a further 303 lanterns and posts. It is followed by improvement work in Colden Common, where some 84 lanterns will be replaced and a further 160 lanterns and posts improved in August. The council launched the scheme in April 2010 under a 25-year, £120 million private finance initiative. Street lighting and upgrading will take place until 2015, and the remaining 20 years will cover the maintenance and operation of new equipment. Unlit locations will not be affected, and areas that have recently installed or upgraded lighting will only have their lantern heads changed.
Praise for Police Chief as total costs revealed. Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner has been praised for publishing his full cost. The House of Commons Home Affairs Committee published detailed information about the PCCs, including Simon Hayes. Its report states that Mr. Hayes, an independent, employs seven staff at a total cost of up to £238,965 to taxpayers, on top of his own salary of £85,000. The committee has called on the government to publish the expected costs of PCC offices compared with the police authorities they replaced. Hampshire's PCC is spending £2 million more this year than the Axed Authority spent in 2012-13, by far the biggest rise anywhere in England. But a spokesman for Mr. Hayes described the £2 million as a one-off sum left over from the previous year, which had not increased the charge for local taxpayers.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Lynn Parker.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And if you could also remember to send back the reply slip about the AGM and the garden party.